Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. We've got a great show coming up for you today. Elon Musk is saying that if he is able to purchase Twitter, which right now is a big if, he says that he will undo the permaban on Donald Trump and welcome the former twice impeached president back onto the platform. And guess what, folks? That might actually be the best thing in the world for Democrats. I'll have more on that in just a minute. Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com is going to be here to talk about the other rights that conservatives are working to strip away from us now that they are pretty much guaranteed to overturn Roe versus Wade. And Sharon Kahn from Media Matters is going to be here to discuss the media's role in helping conservatives overturn Roe. And don't forget, you can get the full show every week, plus access to the entirety of the Ring of Fire archives. Just go sign up and become a member at rofpodcast.com. You can also get Ring of Fire every single day of the week on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheRingOfFire. So before we get into the discussions today about Roe v. Wade, I did want to take a moment to talk about censorship. Specifically, what conservatives believe to be this big social media, big tech attack on conservative voices here. Because we actually had several developments with that this week alone. First and foremost, obviously the big one, Elon Musk does an interview with the Financial Times on Tuesday where he says that Donald Trump's ban from Twitter was morally wrong and flat out stupid. Yes, banning the guy that was using his platform to spread lies about the 2020 election being stolen. And then, of course, you know, not condemning the Capitol rioters. Yeah, that was totally morally wrong and flat out stupid, right, Elon? Well, no. The ban was well deserved. But here's the thing. When Elon said that he would reverse that ban, welcome Donald Trump back on Twitter, but Trump, of course, said 2 weeks ago, he is not coming back to Twitter. Yes, he will. Conservatives immediately said, oh, wow, this is going to trigger those liberals, right? Oh, I can't wait to drink all those liberal tears, they were saying. Steven Crowder said, get the popcorn ready for the liberal freakouts. Let me tell you something here, Steve. Liberals, probably more than anybody, want Donald Trump back on Twitter. I know I may have just exposed our dirty little secret, but trust me, nobody wants Donald Trump back on Twitter more than those of us on the left. Well, maybe that's not true. I think there is one group that probably wants Donald Trump back on Twitter more than we do, and that would be the folks at the corporate media. I mean, heck, they could get an entire 12-hour news cycle out of a single Donald Trump tweet. And for those of us on the left, trust me, man, whenever we needed filler content, right, if it was a slow news day, all we had to do was go to Donald Trump's Twitter feed, find any stupid tweet he had sent out for the last, 24 hours, do a 3-minute segment on it, and you're guaranteed a couple hundred thousand views. It was easy content. It would make people outraged. They loved it. And again, that's why the corporate media did it too. It was easy. It was good ratings. I don't think it's a coincidence that CNN's ratings have, of course, gone down the toilet ever since Donald Trump left office and was kicked off Twitter. I believe there is a direct correlation with that as well. And more importantly than just getting clicks and likes, Donald Trump's Twitter feed did something very important. And it's something very important that during a House interaction this week, Jamie Raskin pointed out to Lauren Boebert. Lauren Boebert got on the House floor this week, and yes, this is tied into Elon Musk, Donald Trump, all that. So Lauren Boebert gets on the House floor this week, starts ranting and raving about that new Department of Homeland Security, misinformation council. Says this is going to lead to censorship. You're going to silence conservative voices. Jamie Raskin comes up after Boebert and says, nobody wants to censor conservatives, trust us, because he says, we want everybody to see what you have to say. We want your words to be amplified because we want to expose you by doing nothing more than giving you a platform. Nobody wants to censor you at all, quite the opposite. And those were powerful and very truthful words from Jamie Raskin. And it's the same with Trump. That's why we want him back on the platform. That's why we want Lauren Boebert there. That's why we want Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Jim Jordan and Ted Cruz. We don't want to silence you. We want to show more people the stupid things you have to say. We want to show them just what lunatics we have in Congress. We want to show them, using your tweets, using your words, how crazy the right has become. Nobody wants to censor you at all. If anything, we would like to see it amplified. We'd like to see you all with 20 million followers every day watching in horror as you tweet some of the dumbest and most dangerous things we have ever seen. Now, obviously, the problem is the unintended consequences, okay? We don't want Donald Trump tweeting out dangerous things that are going to get people hurt. We don't want him tweeting out lies about an election being stolen that results in Colorado election workers having to wear body armor, which, yes, is a thing that's happening. Okay, so obviously there are dangers, and those dangers do need to be addressed. How do we do that? I don't know. I wish I had answers for everything, but I do not. Nobody does. So those are things that we do have to address. But Donald Trump just being on Twitter, attacking people, making fun of people, yeah, we do want that. And here's an interesting point as well. When you look back at Republican polling leading into the 2020 election, a lot of the more moderate Republicans made it clear that they liked Trump's policies, but what really turned them off was his Twitter. They specifically mentioned his tweets as a reason that they did not want to continue to support him, even though they supported his policies. Nobody has benefited more from Donald Trump being kicked off Twitter than the Republican Party. Had that man been allowed to stay on Twitter, I don't even know that we'd be talking about him right now as the potential frontrunner in the 2024 presidential race for the Republicans. He would have doomed himself at that point. I mean, heck, we lost a year and a half almost of opposition research and attacks from him not being on Twitter. So yes, there are dangers. Yes, there are things we have to address about him coming back on. But at the end of the day, him being there probably is the best thing for Republicans. Oh, I'm sorry, for Democrats. And Republicans think it's the exact opposite. Republicans think that they're the ones who are going to benefit, and oh, the liberals are going to be crying their salty, sweet tears, and we'll just drink them up. No. We're not going to be crying. We're not going to be triggered. We're going to be laughing. We're going to be talking about it. And we're going to be using those tweets against the Republican Party at every possible opportunity. Last week's leaked draft of the Supreme Court decision regarding the overturning of Roe v. Wade immediately sent people thinking, what kind of horrible slippery slope could we be on at this point? Well, unfortunately, we didn't have to wait long, because we're already seeing the slippery slope emerge. Joining me to talk about this, our good friend Heather Digby Parton from Salon.com. And Heather, oh my God, in just the last, what, 8, 9, maybe even 10 days at this point, we have already seen these Republicans kick it into high gear because they feel like they've essentially been given a green light to go after not just pregnancy and abortion, but just all of women's health right now. And this is a truly terrifying slope. Again, in just a week, we've already seen this start develop. It's terrifying.
It is terrifying. And what, you know, we've seen this sort of growing over time. I mean, you know, there have been things going on in the past where you had the, you know, you've had these trigger laws that have been put into place over the past couple of years. There have been this kind of, you know, acceleration of the idea of there being no exemptions for rape and incest. I mean, these things have sort of been coming along. And of course, once the announcement was made, those people, unlike the people in Washington who were kind of walking around very you know, kind of delicately trying to figure out how the best way to deal with this, because they do know that is, you know, they may, those people may be dancing in the streets, their base, the, you know, the other side is also be energized and mobilized by this as well. So they've been worried about it. But the activists and the people who are working in the states, which is where all the action's going to be, if they do end up overturning Roe, which really looks like they are, they are absolutely excited. I mean, you had things like in Louisiana, they immediately set out to pass a new law that would make abortion homicide. And theoretically, anyway, at least from the way it looks, that this could also target the woman who, you know, has the abortion. I mean, there are laws, there's talk of trying to find some way to keep women from crossing state lines if they're pregnant, which would somehow require some sort of tracking of women, because how else would you do such a thing? And, you know, this is just going on and on. There's an awful lot of it, and it just exploded from the minute that the leak, you know, was revealed. And you can see exactly. Meanwhile, the Republicans, you've got Sean Hannity saying last night on his show, these people are hysterical. Nothing's going to change. And you just, you know, I mean, well, that tells you that they're nervous about it, right? But the fact that he would even say that to his own audience, which, you know, that's where they all gather, right? This is where all the anti-abortion people are. And the fact that he would say that, I found very interesting. I mean, they are very nervous about this. They're very cautious about this. And there is a split within the Republican coalition on this. That a lot of the people who have to run statewide and are worried about the election coming up in 2022, in November, I mean, they are concerned about this because they know that it's going to be a problem. So it's been very interesting to watch this happen. Democrats and, you know, pro-choice, pro-abortion, you know, abortion rights advocates are absolutely right to be up in arms and upset, because this is happening. It's happening all over the country. It's happening in all these red states. And you can bet that there's going to be lots of pressure put on people, even in blue states, if only the additional pressure, the financial pressure of trying to accommodate people from all over the country who are going to have to come there to get abortions and other reproductive care. So this is a very, very volatile situation.
It is. And, you know, I did a live stream, you know, immediately after this, you know, decision was leaked here. And the thing I mentioned at the time, I said, you just watch, the first thing they're going to come after is making it illegal for a woman to leave the state to go to a different area to get an abortion. And of course, we've already seen, even before this leak, we saw inklings of that, like in Texas, right? Texas is an area where they had said, well, what if now women just go north of the border and try to do this? Okay, well, we'll work on that. And now they want to, you know, put a woman to death in Texas. That is the new proposed legislation. Like, we'll kill you if you get an abortion. They want to get the death penalty for that. They're so pro-life, you know, the tweet said, they're so pro-life, they'll kill you for it. and that really is what we're dealing with here, because they don't care about women at all. All they pretend, of course, to care about is a fetus, you know, or even based on these abortion bans, a cluster of dividing cells is what they pretend to care about. Of course, if they cared, they'd be offering prenatal care. They'd be offering, you know, free ultrasounds and sonograms and all of these things to actually help women who are pregnant. But no, they're not doing anything other than saying, we don't care if you were raped. It's an opportunity. One Republican told us it's an opportunity if you're raped and get pregnant from it. There's no reasoning with these people at all. I mean, they have totally gone off the deep end on this. So I don't even know how we have real conversations about it when they're clearly not willing to listen and rationalize things like rape as an opportunity. There's no talking to that.
Absolutely. And the thing is that, of course, there's no compromising on this, because the compromises already took place over the course of the last 50 years. Roe itself was a compromise. They did a balancing act. The three trimesters, and then the first trimester, a woman had a right to have an abortion for any reason. The second trimester, the states were allowed to regulate on the basis of health and other things. And in the third trimester, they were allowed to do an abortion in rare cases where the woman's health and life were in danger. These are things that were built into Roe versus Wade. They came along with Casey and actually, you know, did even more compromise. And, you know, you couldn't do an undue burden, but they were allowed to put all kinds, you know, all these ultrasound bills and all these things like, you know, requiring 72-hour waiting periods and notifying people and all this other stuff. There was tons of compromise already built into America's, you know, crazy quilt of abortion laws all over the country. So that is clearly compromise is not going to do it. They were never going to agree that abortion in any way was going to be allowed. They are seeking a total ban on abortion. And in fact, immediately, and it's funny because even before the leak came out, and I just find it such a weird coincidence, but it's true. I think it was 2 days before the leak was revealed. There was a story in the Washington Post about how they were strategizing on the right among activists and members of Congress to invoke a national ban. That was already in the works before this leak. They knew that, you know, it was a good chance that Roe was going to be overturned, and they've been planning for this. Now, Mitch McConnell, rarely does he make a mistake, but he made one this week. Because, or maybe he didn't. Maybe he was just trying to have it both ways. Maybe he's that Machiavellian. But he came out in an interview with USA Today and said, you know, it's possible that we could have a national ban, but I will not agree to break the filibuster for any single issue. Well, that's nonsense. He broke the filibuster just to couple of months ago to get the debt ceiling raised. He broke the filibuster for the Supreme Court. I mean, clearly that is, you know, and you can take his word for what it is, which is garbage. But nonetheless, he came out and put this national ban kind of on the agenda, and people kind of panicked about it. Republicans did. And, oh, God, you know, that's the last thing we want right now. You know, people are really going to get upset. I mean, you can just see how, you know, how difficult this terrain is for Republicans who know that Roe versus Wade is extremely popular and supported by the vast majority of people, even in their own states. Where this really hurts them is in these places where in Senate races. Now in the House, it may not be as easy. Those are, you know, it's been gerrymandered to death, and most probably the majority in those Republican districts are going to go along with whatever, you know, ridiculous promises these people are making about abortion. But in statewide races, this is going to be tough. That's governor's races, and it's going to hit Senate races coming up in the fall. And they're obviously very nervous about it. And so, you know, one of the things I wrote this week was about how Democrats, they're doing this show vote. In fact, it may be happening as we speak. I don't know. It's supposed to happen today, in which they get Republicans in the Senate on the record voting against Roe versus Wade. And my feeling on that is, who didn't know they were against Roe versus Wade? Oh, it's in the party platform. I mean, that is not revealing anything. What would reveal something, however, would be if Chuck Schumer put on the agenda some votes about, do you want to outlaw women crossing state lines? Do you want to, you know, do you want to allow people to be prosecuted for miscarriages? Do you want all these things that we've just been talking about? Do you think that abortion could be called murder? Do you want women to be prosecuted for having an abortion? Those specific things, those very, very specific extremist positions, which are happening everywhere, it's not hypothetical, it's real. That's where the Republicans need to be put on the record. That we know they don't want Roe versus Wade. But what nobody knows is where they stand on the rest of this stuff, which is the slippery slope, as you put it, which is really, really slippery right now. So I think that I would hope that the Democrats would get, you know, a little more savvy about this. Maybe they're planning it. You know, I don't know that, but it just struck me as that, you know, this, oh, we're going to get them on the record about Roe versus Wade. And I'm going, oh, well, that's going to be a shocker. I wonder what they'll do, you know?
Yeah. It's funny because I had said the exact same thing. I said, we know where they, so we know where pretty much everybody stands on this. We don't need them on the record. They're all very openly on the record.
Exactly.
There's a wonderful website called On the Issues where you can look up any member of Congress and literally see where they stand on the issues. So this is not a mystery for anybody. We know what these people are going to do. We know what Mitch McConnell has said. And you know, he did attempt to walk it back a little bit. Because he did come out and he said, well, you know, we're probably never going to have the numbers, you know, so it's not going to actually ever happen. But that to me kind of says that, Mitch McConnell, again, as you said, this very calculated individual, I have given him a ton of credit over the years. He's an evil bastard, but he is very politically savvy. He messed up this week, and that isn't something we usually see. And like you said, it shows how flustered they are. And this may end up for them being one of those situations where be careful what you wish for, because now you've got this on your hands. One, you're not going to be able to run on overturning Roe v. Wade anymore, because that's going to be gone. So you're going to have to go to the more extremes. And the more extreme you get, the better chance you have at turning off some of those moderates, which could cost you big time. So maybe it backfires in that respect. Again, that's, you know, got to wait to see what happens. Again, wait to see if Roe v. Wade even does get overturned. Maybe there's a shocking thing and it won't happen. I have no faith in that, but it's still a slight possibility, I guess.
Well, it is a slight possibility, very slight, I would say as well. But let's just say that if that happens, you haven't seen protests in front of a justice's house until you see protests from the right at the justices who would vote not to overturn Roe. Because I can just imagine, especially now after this has been leaked, just how, you know, and they have a history of violence. Whereas these protests that are at the justice's house, at Alito, and I guess it was Kavanaugh's house, and then they did some chalk. A little chalk art in front of Susan Collins's house up in Maine. And, you know, everybody's having a hissy fit over it. And I mean, these just couldn't, they were sitting there saying that Alito likes Nickelback. I mean, that was the kind of protest they had.
Well, and Kavanaugh's neighbors were feeding people.
Yeah.
They said, here, have some food. We've organized this.
We've got some cheese and wine for you. I mean, you know, these were hardly, you know, January 6th level, you know, nobody was talking about hanging Alito in front of his house, but they, you know, you would think that they were by what how the right is portraying it. It is a complete hysteria over this thing. And that's, again, it's another example. It's just like the fact that when the leak was revealed, the first thing they did was try and misdirect from the substance of the leak to the leak itself and suggest that, you know, this is the worst thing that's ever happened. It's a complete, you know, degradation of our institutions and blah, blah, blah. And they went nuts on that for a few days. Now it's these protests, but it's all the same thing. It's trying to misdirect people and trying to keep their people, you know, sort of focused in that direction and trying to keep, I think, the mushy middle that they think is there. And the truth is there really isn't one. I mean, pro-Roe is 60-70% of the population. And they're going to try and convince people that it's the Democrats who are extreme and want to, you know, change everything. But, you know, that is not, it defies reality in a moment where they just overturned Roe versus Wade to expect that the people who have, you know, there are some people who have, you know, some reservations about Roe and whether or not, you know, the third trimester, you know, there should be allowed any kind of abortions. And, you know, there's a lot of that sort of, you know, it's not an easy topic. And for a lot of people, it's kind of, you know, but at the end of the day, they're saying, no, look, you know, women have to be the ones to make the decision. That's ultimately where that comes down, is that, I don't know, I don't think the government should be making that decision for individual women. They don't know their circumstances. They can't know what the real situation is. We're not going to do that. That seems to be the sort of common sense view of most Americans. So they can sit there all they want and say that Democrats are extreme and they're doing this and that and the other, and they want abortions. What are they saying now? They want abortions up until the moment of birth. And you're going, what are you talking about? That doesn't even make any sense. I mean, it's like, and I think, you know, most people have some, you know, experience with childbirth, if it's only their own, you know, I mean, we all know what happens there. And the idea that they're saying that, that's just a ridiculous statement. And it works for their own rabid base and their own anti-abortion zealots. But it's not going to work on people who have a common sense view of how this is going to work. And I think they know it. I think that there's just this, I just sense this desperation to try and get a handle on how best to beat this thing back. I'm a little bit surprised, to tell you the truth, because they're generally pretty good at planning. Democrats, not so much. But the Republicans, I generally think that I would have thought that they had a, you know, strategy for how to deal with Roe if it came down in June. I mean, the only difference here is that, you know, it was the end of April instead of June. I mean, it's not a big deal. We all sort of knew what was coming, and so did they. And yet here they are kind of flailing a bit. So I find that kind of interesting and maybe just a little bit hopeful that they're knocked off their game here enough that the Democrats, if they're smart and they move fast and they you know, kind of get their activist base going and really work it with intelligence. And, you know, maybe today's vote, there'll be some good speeches and some things that will make a difference. But, you know, I just hope that they kind of keep that going, because they have to be on the offense with this issue. And with the January 6th committee hearings that are going to come up in a month or so, that's another place where they can do it. I mean, the Democrats have got to use what they have, and they're pretty potent. You know, both, you know, gee, assault on democracy, you know, destroying women's rights. I mean, it seems like they have some stuff to work with here, which is not necessarily always true in a midterm like this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they've got a ton of red meat for their base.
Yeah.
They just have to figure out how to properly use it. And, you know, to your point where you're talking about these conservatives kind of being caught on their heels, not understanding what to do, it makes me wonder a bit, because all we can do is wonder, I guess, about the identity of the leaker, their political leanings and their motivations. Makes me wonder if maybe these conservatives are a little upset, like, hey, why didn't you leak it to us first? Why didn't you let us strategize a little bit about it? Because mathematically speaking, we obviously have a 6-3 Supreme Court. So you've got far more conservatives up there than you do liberals. So just mathematically, it would lean towards, it was likely a conservative. Now, obviously, math doesn't play much into this. It could have been anybody. But I will be interested to see if it comes out that this was somebody working for one of the conservative justices. Are Republicans going to be still be as vicious in calling for this individual to be thrown in jail and fired and never hired anywhere again, ostracized from the country? They've accused this person of treason, whoever it is. That, to me, honestly, is the biggest reason I really do hope that it's a conservative. Beyond that, I don't care. I just want to see how they would react if it turns out this was, in fact, somebody working for a conservative judge. I think that would be the only fun we could get out of this at all.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, and it would be fun. I think, you know, judging from what we've been reading over the last few days, or that since the leak was published, is that, you know, it looks more and more like it was a conservative. And the reason that they say that is because there were leaks before this to the Wall Street Journal. There was a leak to Politico. There were, and to the Washington Post, which somebody was talking, right? I mean, somebody was saying something even before the leak. Since the leak, there's been a cascade of commentary from people close to the conservative justices saying things like, well, they were really mad at John Roberts after the, I can't remember which one of the cases it was, but, you know, a lot of stuff coming out with some really bad blood, not with the liberals. It's bad blood with John Roberts. I think that is, you know, so my feeling is, if we find out who the leaker is, if it's John Roberts, a member of his, you know, one of his clerks or aides or whatever, they will be, you know, they'll go vicious on him. But if it was one of their people, they'll probably backpedal. I mean, I don't know. And I'm with you. I don't care. A leak is a leak. This could be a whistleblower. It could be somebody trying to manipulate the whole vote. I mean, today, I think there was in the Washington Post another leak saying that the vote had not changed and that no dissents or any other opinions had even circulated. Now, that might be a lie. I mean, maybe that's just somebody saying something to try and manipulate the situation, or maybe it's true. And, you know, which would indicate, you know, what? I don't even know. But, you know, there's a lot of that kind of thing going on now, where you can see the court itself And it seems to not have, I mean, I haven't heard anything about the liberals. Everybody knows what they're going to do, right? I mean, they're going to write a dissent, blistering dissent against the overturning of Roe versus Wade, but it won't make any difference. And, you know, unless Roberts does succeed in bringing over one of the five, you know, one of the, you know, Trumpers and Alito and or Thomas, which is obviously not going to happen. You know, this is the argument. If there is one, the court churning, this court, you know, losing its majestic, you know, mystery and all this other stuff people are talking about. This is among them. They're fighting among themselves. This is where that the court itself is having the conservatives, this six conservative majority on the court. They're fighting among themselves the same way that the Republicans externally are fighting among themselves. It's happening all over the place. I mean, this is what's driving me crazy about this, you know, this kind of, you know, gloomy Gus sort of Democratic view, you know, say, oh, we're going to lose. Joe Biden's not popular. Inflation and gas prices. Me, me, me. I'm going, have you seen what's happening to your rivals? They are at each other's throats over here. They're absolutely, and you've got Trump coming in. I mean, the elections last night, you know, it was a split. Even Steve, Trump guy won in West Virginia, lost big in Nebraska. You know, this, that just shows, I mean, this is, they are having a civil war within their own party. And the Democrats have got to just get off this negative sort of, you know, self-defeating attitude and recognize that they, as you just said, they've got a lot of red meat there. If they're willing to, you know, throw it at people and say, here, enjoy, you know, we got some stuff for you.
Well, and that's what they should be doing right now, too. I mean, one of the things that always drives me crazy, you know, any cycle really, is the fact that we only start seeing these ads once we're in the heart of the campaign. There is no reason for the Democratic Party to not be funding nationwide ad campaigns right now on TV, you know, showing clips of Marjorie Taylor Greene or showing clips of Matt Gaetz or talking about this, you know, horrific legislation, using their positions of power. Like Josh Hawley today comes out and says, I've made legislation to punish Disney for being woke. Like, that is an abuse of power. There's an ad. There's an ad in every single one of these people. Talk about the allegations against Matt Gaetz. You know, talk about Mitch McConnell and all of the horrible things he's done. The Kevin McCarthy tapes that you and I talked about a couple weeks ago. The Lindsey Graham tapes that are now out there. Good God, there's 10 ads right there. You could produce them in 24 hours, put them on TVs across the country to show people. Because the thing I always like to remind people, and this is kind of disappointing, but the majority of people in this country do not consume political news every day. So a lot of this, what is daily for you and I, for everybody listening to this program as well, we do consume it. But we also sometimes forget that not everybody else does. And that's why the Democrats have to get better on messaging, because I think they do assume like, well, no, everybody knows these things. They really don't. Most people wake up, they go to work, they get the kids to school, they come home, they do dinner, they watch TV, you know, a couple of sitcoms, and they go to bed. That's their daily routine. They're not, you know, unfortunately, they're not watching Ring of Fire. They're not all reading Salon.com. They're not all on YouTube or MSNBC or CNN. We have to remind everybody and sometimes educate them fully about all the things that, you know, you and I just come across every day, and we try to digest it and distill it for folks. Too many people aren't getting those messages, but that's on the national party. You know, we can only do so much, and we do. We get too far into it where we get sick of it sometimes. But the national party's got to start funding these ads and get those messages out to everybody in this country as quickly as possible, too.
Honestly, I think you're absolutely right. And I think it is potent. People don't look. Most people don't watch Fox News. I mean, there are even among on the right, you know, what do they get? Maybe, you know, 3-4 million viewers and a night on something like Tucker Carlson. I mean, that's not a lot of people. And granted, it all, you know, it comes out in other places and they have right wing media and all that stuff. But I mean, the fact is that if you did a just a campaign that you just laid out, which is have all these things that people they're actually saying, it could be just called the in their own words campaign. Nothing but just what they're saying. You know, you don't have to really even editorialize much. Just put it out there. This is what they're saying. Now, it's true. Maybe some people on the right who, you know, haven't seen it would go, wow, that Lindsey Graham, he's really cool. Or maybe they'd say, yeah, gee, you know, that sounds good. You know, that really sounds good. Not letting women cross state lines. I'm for that. But honestly, I think far more people who aren't able to pay attention to news, that just their lives are full. They have too much going on, that they'd be shocked by hearing some of this stuff. It's so far out outside of any mainstream that we have known in our lives up until now. This is way, way out there. These people are talking about crazy stuff, and they acted crazy on January 6th, and they elected a crazy man as president, which everybody saw and voted against, by the way. You know, I mean, they need to be reminded. That's one reason why I'm not upset about Trump coming back on Twitter.
I'm not either. I think it's great.
To me, I think let him go out there. You know, you remember every article where anybody was saying, you know, well, I don't care for what Trump does on Twitter. I don't like his tweets. But other than that, I really like his policies. Well, if they don't like his tweets, let's give him some of his tweets. That's my view on it. I mean, I know a lot of people disagree with that you shouldn't, you know, give him a platform or whatever. But he's the 2024 nominee, almost certainly. Yes, you have to expose what he's saying and doing. And it's as crazy as ever, by the way. If anybody here at watching this is not paying attention to Donald Trump, I have to because it's my job. I know you do too. He's as loony as he's ever been, and even a little bit, you know, more than he was before, especially with this stuff about the 2020 election, which he cannot let go of. So, you know, people need to hear that. I think people, you know, in their own words, I think that's a great national campaign. Just let people hear it.
Well, and that is one thing Republicans are very, very good at, is always just kind of shooting themselves in the foot. You know, whenever they could have an upper hand, and let's be honest right now, just historically speaking, Republicans are already poised to make big midterm wins because that is what historically happens when the presidency changes powers and blah, 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 and all that. And we all know that. So they already had the upper hand here. Where they got into trouble, obviously, is all this infighting that starts, and then your weird Madison Cawthorn stuff, and then your Lauren Boebert, and then going after Liz Cheney over here for not loving Trump, and then Trump coming back into the fold and endorsing just the worst of the worst. They take themselves down so frequently. And I think the Democrats get a little too complacent with it sometimes, saying, we just watch them fight. This is hilarious. People are turning off. But not enough people are turning off. You know, we can let them attack each other, but we got to come back in and finish it off. You know, we have to maybe fuel the fires, I guess, sometimes. And that's what that's what should be happening.
You know, yeah, that's politics. Of course you have to fuel the fires. That's, you know, that's what you have to do. And by the way, you know, this midterm is a little different, even on the structural level. Historically speaking, the main reason why a midterm after a you know, government changes partisan hands is because the coattails of the president, the one who won the presidency, tend to fall off in the midterm, that they just got dragged in with that. Well, that didn't happen in 2020. That there were no coattails. That just wasn't that kind of an election. And when that happens, the dynamic may be a little different than historically. Now, I'm not trying to blow smoke and say, you know, yes, the president's approval rating is very, you know, low, and that always is a drag on the party. But I will say this, that, you know, lately the generic, you know, numbers for the Democratic Party have been coming up. And granted, we know that structurally, that means Democrats still have to have like an 8-point, you know, margin in order to break even because, you know, of our great democratic system. But nonetheless, it is not hopeless. I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's not hopeless on a structural basis this time. But it's exactly what you say. You know, people don't know that the Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot if they're not paying attention. Or if they're not, you know, if they're not able to sort of discern what's going on, even on Fox News, they're getting, you know, if you're watching right wing media, you're in a bizarro world, right? You're in a completely different, on a different plane than the rest of the country. But a lot of people just don't understand exactly what's happening. That is the Democrats' job. I mean, yes, they're shooting themselves in the foot, but it doesn't mean anything if people don't know about it, if people don't really understand. It's not enough to stand up and just give a speech in front of the cameras and say, you know, those, you know, MAGA Republicans, they're really terrible. You know, you've got to do a serious, you know, information campaign like you just described. And, you know, go out on social media, and it's got to be disciplined, and it has to be, look, this is what we're dealing with. And, you know, they're afraid of that. Honestly, the Democrats think they want to run on the infrastructure bill, you know, and gee, things, the job numbers, you know, and it's, you know, I think we talked about this before. You know, you got to meet people where they are, and where they are is kind of freaked out because the world is very unsettled. And we just had, you know, they've got a case of collective mass PTSD over, you know, 4 years, 5 years of Trump, and then post-Trump, and the pandemic, of course. We've got wars in Europe. That's a little unsettling. Yeah. You've got this inflation, which is for many people have never experienced inflation in their lives. People are unsettled. People are freaked out. And you can't just sit there and come up to them and say, well, you should be feeling better about things than you do. You know, that is not a winning electoral message. So I say run against the other guys. They are weirdos, as James Carville said. These are a bunch of weirdos. They are, you know, tell people that. Let them know.
Well, and they are. And I think, you know, you made a great point when you talked about, you know, the Fox News viewership. Tucker Carlson, most watched person on cable news, 3 million a night, you know, on good nights. So what is that? Is it about 0.8% of the U.S. population, 0.8%? And hey, again, he's winning the ratings battles. But when we actually start to break it down that way, I think conservatively, 95% of this country is not consuming political news on a daily basis at all. Yeah. Again, they just go about their lives. And that's when you can get them, right? Those are the people who, yes, they have their political beliefs, but I think you can sway some of them because they're not being swayed by a Tucker Carlson or a Sean Hannity or, you know, Joe Rogan. But I think you can get to those people and just open their eyes a little bit and say, hey, you realize this is what this party has become. This is who they are. You know, Liz Cheney, who 10 years ago, we're all talking about how extreme and warmongering she is. Mitt Romney, who we all railed against in 2012 for his, you know, greed and obscene wealth and all that. These people look like, I mean, God, they look like total normal people. When you compare them to the people coming up, Sarah Palin doesn't seem as nuts anymore compared to this new crop of people. Christine O'Donnell putting out the I'm not a witch ad.
Right.
That wouldn't even make a headline today because of all the nutso people we have. And there was a time when that was like the worst of the worst that the Republican Party had, right? Mitt Romney saying, we've got binders full of women. That took him down in the polls. Today, you're going to get a standing ovation from Republicans for saying that.
Oh, my God. And far worse. I mean, you know, yeah, that would be, they wouldn't even notice if he said so, if someone said that. I mean, think about it. I think it was in 2012, Todd Akin, who was running in Missouri, I think he ran against Claire McCaskill for the Senate, said, you know, there's such a thing as, you know, if a woman, they were talking about the rape exceptions, yep, right? If a woman was a victim of legitimate rape, it was legitimate, then maybe we would consider it. It was just a massive, you know, kind of, oh my God, what did he say? That's the most horrible thing in the world. It was grotesque, of course, you know, it was ridiculous. I mean, that's the kind of thing that is just totally common today. And in fact, he is considered the moderate in that because he was allowing some exception for somebody. Now there is just no exception for legitimate or illegitimate rape or any other kind of rape, including incest on some poor 12-year-old girl. That is their position now. That is, I mean, 11 states have passed laws that do have no exception now for rape and incest, for abortion. This is where they've gone, and they've gone really fast. I mean, in 2019, Kevin McCarthy is quoted saying that's going too far. 2 years ago, you know, three, little over 2 years ago. And now It's a totally common, reasonable, middle of the road position by Republicans. They will not condemn that. And that's one reason why Chuck Schumer really needs to bring that bill up on the Senate. Get those senators to vote on whether or not they believe there should be exceptions for rape and incest, because that is massively unpopular. Massively. I mean, we're talking like 90%, even pretty hardcore right-wing anti-abortion people. They're kind of iffy on that one.
Yeah. And you know, I do want to bring up, too, just to talk about how extreme this party has become. I'm going to take even further back than 2012. I don't know if you remember this. George Allen, the Republican, I forget where he was running, but he was at his little campaign thing, and there was the Oppo guy, and he referred to him as Makaka.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an Indian American. And that was one of the first, you know, when people started videoing and uploading, that was in the early days of YouTube. That ended George Allen's career.
It did.
But today, they can go out there and say horrible slurs about anyone they want. I mean, the video of Donald Trump mocking the reporter. I mean,
yeah.
And they cheer for it. George Allen would be a Republican hero today if he ran and said something like that. And that would be, you know, a hashtag on Twitter going around like, hey, let's start using this phrase. And that just shows you, and you and I have been in this for long enough to see this creepy evolution that I really wish everybody else fully understood, because this ain't what it was 10 years ago. It sure as heck isn't what it was 20 years ago. Yep. And I shudder to think of what it's going to be 10 years from now. Are we going to be sitting here talking like, man, don't you miss the good old days of Matt Gaetz and the normal Republicans? But
you and I probably won't be allowed to sit here and do this. they're not going to, you know, I mean, seriously, you know, you look at things like what Josh Hawley did. You know, we're going to remove, you know, Disney's copyright protections because they are woke. Now, there's a lot of arguments to be made about copyright protections. I'm not going to get into that, but the rationale for it, the rationale that they don't like their political views, and that's why they're going to use the strong arm of the government to punish them or to bring them in line, that is not Republicanism as we have known it in our lifetime. That's a new thing. And, well, it's not all that new. It kind of goes back to the 1930s in Europe. I mean, there was some of that. So, you know, we're talking about a very, very extreme movement that isn't just on the culture war stuff. This is on a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, what you see Ron DeSantis doing, well, you know better than anybody.
Yeah.
When you see what Ron DeSantis is doing, that is not your father's Republican Party. I mean, they have made a complete, you know, 180 in terms of their fundamental philosophy about government and small government and, you know, whether or not, I mean, they're out there railing. He's forcing students to learn about anti-communism now in the schools down there. And it's like, dude, you know, maybe you should take that class because you have more in common with the communists than Americans do. I mean, that kind of, you know, this kind of state authority, which they used to be completely railing against. Now, they're moving very swiftly toward that kind of nationalist authoritarian system, more like, you know, someone like Viktor Orban in Hungary is really the model there, which includes all this culture war stuff, by the way, because Orban, totally anti-immigration, you know, wanting women to, you know, have many more children, you know, there's all that kind of stuff going on there too. But that's the model that we're seeing. And I am absolutely positive that people don't see it. I'm not sure the Democratic Party sees it. I'm not sure that they're really, I mean, there are a few, there are some members of Congress and, you know, elected officials who you'll see say stuff, you know, like Sheldon Whitehouse or Brian Schatz in the Senate, you know, people like that who are savvy about it. Certainly Jamie Raskin and some of the January 6th people are aware. But I mean, this is a creeping, and it's not creeping that slowly. I mean, it's happening pretty fast. It's sort of a takeover of the Republican Party into a right-wing nationalist authoritarian movement. And the fact that they have now, you know, packed the Supreme Court with members of that movement who, you know, wait till you see what they do with laws that aren't culture war laws, because, I mean, they're going to be even wilder. You know, we are dealing with something very scary. So when I say, you know, 10 years from now, you and I may not be allowed to do this, I'm being serious. I mean, I'm sure that that is a possibility unless the American people wake up and put a stop to it before it goes any further.
Absolutely. But you know what? For right now, you and I are allowed to do this. And Heather Parton Digby, salon.com, I love talking with you. And as long as we're legally allowed to do it, I'm going to continue doing this. So thank you very much for spending all this time with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
That's all for this week's free portion of the Ring of Fire podcast. But if you want the full show every single week, plus access to our Ring of Fire archives, go sign up and become a member at ROFpodcast.com.